Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcasts of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. You can also access us on the WDIY app. Our topic tonight is taxes, but a little spin on this. I want to talk about taxes maybe more from like a payroll standpoint as an employee versus self-employed, and then some related planning around those items. And the reason I thought it could be worth talking about is a number of us have had experiences where someone has wanted to hire us, and they may hire us as an employee, or they might say, we're going to hire you as an independent contractor. And I think it's really important to understand the differences and what that means so that you can, you know, go in with knowledge of whether that really is allowed. Does it make sense? Are you really a contractor? Are you really an employee? I think it's really important, and to understand the tax ramifications about those decisions. And just to be aware, you know, if most of us are employees, it's about being aware about some of the taxes that we pay. I know when my nephew first got his job, he was surprised about all the taxes that he was paying, and I had to explain to him what each of the layers meant and you know, explain Social Security and things like that. So we'll be talking about that tonight. Kyle is in the studio with us this evening, and we are live. So if you have questions, he will answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. While I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can talk live with me or give your question to Kyle. If you're not comfortable talking live, he'll write it down and bring it in to me. So that's what we're doing tonight, discussing taxes from an employee perspective and from a self-employed perspective, the differences and where there could be a gray area, and planning opportunities for each. And I also wanted to mention there are times when we're both an employee and self-employed. There might be times where someone's doing consulting on the side while being an employee, or, you know, have a business on the side while also being an employee. So I think it's important to understand what that means as well. From the IRS website, on the employee side, you are under the direction, you know, of an employer. You pay income taxes, but the employer withholds them for you based on, you know, a tax form you complete, which is called a W-4. So when you get hired as an employee, typically, you are under the supervision direction of, you know, a manager, an employer, and they tell you what the hours are that you work. They tell you the kind of work they expect, and, you know, you go in. There could be benefits around that. You might have an employer retirement plan available, health insurance. There could be some life insurance benefits, various, health insurance? Yeah, various benefits that might be available from an employer, okay? And when they hire you, they will have you complete onboarding, employee onboarding documents. And one of those is called the W-4. It's the Employees Withholding Certificate. Basically, fill it in with your name, an address, your social security number, your filing status. Filing status is, are you filing as a single filer, married filing separate, married filing joint, or head of household? Head of household is, you know, you're single, unmarried, and pay for the cost of keeping up a home for yourself and a qualifying individual. So that is the first part of the information. And then step two, they talk about multiple jobs or if a spouse works. And you can use an estimator that the IRS has online at www.irs.gov and then /W4, as in the number 4, APP. And that will help you know how to fill it out. Or you can just kind of ask your tax preparer or, you know, your advisor how you might fill it out. There is a section in this part two that talks about if there are only two jobs that you can check a box. So if you're married, again, this step two is multiple jobs or spouse works, you want to do the same thing on each W-4 to say if there's two jobs. The reason you have to do that is because an employer uses this form to calculate the federal income tax withholdings based on your income, and they only know the income you have at that one job. If you have a second job, maybe making comparable income, or a spouse who makes comparable income, basically these employer withholding tables will factor in the standard deduction based on your filing status. So if you said you're married filing joint and you didn't check that box saying two jobs, they're going to apply the standard deduction for married filing joint to just your income. Now, if your spouse does the same thing, then they're also going to apply the standard deduction for married filing joint for that job. And now we've overstated the standard deduction twofold if that happens. Or if you have two jobs and do that and not check that box, they will also overestimate the standard deduction. That's why it's important to fill this out accurately. So if you have two jobs or a spouse who works, you want to check that box. And then step three is for claiming dependents and how to calculate that. The reason we want to be a little careful here is, yes, if you have dependents and you strictly have just your wages, maybe just one job, or as I said, the two jobs, and you're each filling out the W-4 accordingly. If you have children that qualify for the child tax credit, then you also want to be careful with that. If the husband is filling out, or spouse one is filling this out and said, I have two children and claim the $2,000 times two, and then the spouse or partner does it on their W-4, again, now we're double counting the child tax credits. You don't want to do that either. One should claim it, the other not. Step four has some other adjustments, and again, probably using that application on the IRS's website to estimate the more accurate withholdings could help in this circumstance. But step four does allow for some optional adjustments for other income, maybe not from a job, maybe from self-employment income, or investment income, interest, dividends, that type of thing, or deductions that you might have some other kinds of deductions, like a health savings account deduction or something like that, that might not be through the employer. It might be through a spouse who is, you know, has a high deductible health plan or something like that. But it also gives you the opportunity to do some extra withholding here. Why would someone want extra withholding? Well, in the case where they might have other income outside of their wages. If someone has, you know, $10,000 of interest or $10,000 of dividends or $10,000 of capital gains, you may have to do estimated tax payments to calculate the tax on that income that otherwise wouldn't be withheld. Obviously, when you're working, they withhold based on your wages. They don't know what your interest and dividends and capital gains are. So if you're not having enough withholding to cover that extra income, you have to make quarterly estimated payments, or this is another way to do it by completing the W-4 and have your employer withhold extra amounts. Then you sign that and give it to your employer, and that's how they know what to calculate when they're looking at the withholdings that they're doing for you for federal income tax. So again, as an employee, your employer, based on this W-4 form, will withhold federal income tax for you and state income tax for you. What I want to talk about when we come back from this next, from this first break, is some of the other taxes that the employer is going to withhold for the employee, and if you're self-employed, what you have to take care of. It's your individual responsibility as a sole proprietor, an independent contractor, self-employed person to take care of your own taxes. So we're going to talk about some of the payroll taxes that employers also take care of for you. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you to the members of WDIY for making all the programming on WDIY possible. Becoming a WDIY member is the best way to support your listening and to ensure WDIY will be here for the next person in our community to discover. Make your membership gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. We couldn't be here without you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about taxes tonight, employee taxes versus self-employed taxes and some related planning around those. We've talked about the federal income tax withholding form, W-4, that you complete when you are an employee working for an employer who uses that form to calculate the federal taxes and state taxes, basically. And they collect those taxes from your pay before they give it to you. You get the net pay, and they are required to submit those taxes to the tax authorities, whether it's the IRS or the state government or local government. But there's other taxes that the employer withholds as well, and those are Social Security and Medicare taxes. And so we typically will call these like payroll taxes. Again, from the IRS's website, an employer generally must withhold part of Social Security and Medicare taxes from employees' wages, and the employer additionally pays a matching amount. This is key to understand the difference between an employee and a self-employed person. The employer pays a matching amount. And when they do those calculations, what they're withholding for the employee is what they will match and pay from the employer side for Social Security tax and Medicare tax. There's one little difference in the matching, which I'll highlight a little bit later. The employer then withholds those and also submits those to the tax authority. They pay the Social Security, their share, and the Medicare share based on these limits. So what are the limits? The Social Security wage base limit for 2021 is $142,800, and the employee tax rate for Social Security is 6.2%. So the employee is responsible for paying 6.2%, and it's automatically taken out of your pay. You don't see it. You don't report it on your tax return. It comes out. The employer pays it. It's done automatically, kind of behind the scene. They're paying 6.2. You're paying 6.2, up to $142,800. If you make more than that, there's no further tax on Social Security above $142,800. So if someone gets above that, you get like a little bonus at some point, is what it feels like. Now, I also mentioned Medicare tax. Beginning January 1 of 2013, employers are responsible for withholding. There is another piece. The Medicare tax is 1.45. I realize they're talking here about an extra Medicare tax. I want to go back first to the regular Medicare tax, which is 1.45%. And that is the employee's responsibility and the employer's responsibility, each 1.45. And there is no wage cap on that. There used to be a long time ago, but they removed that. And now the 1.45 applies to all of the wages, even if you go over that 142.8. The additional Medicare tax is something that they started beginning January 1, 2013, and that is 0.9%. Sounds very small, 0.9%. That's not even one. It's 0.9%. It's an additional Medicare tax on an employee's wages and compensation that exceeds a threshold amount based on the employee's filing status, and the employer is required to withhold that from the period in which in which the wages are over those thresholds. And the thresholds are, I printed those out, it gets quite high. It's like 250,000 for married filing joint, $125,000 for married filing separate, and for single head of household or qualifying widower, it's $200,000. So those are the thresholds. So once someone goes over those thresholds, so your filing status based on your W-4 will tell them what they have to withhold. And that's on the gross wages as well. Some people think it's my federal wages, but the federal wages might be lower because of 401k contributions or what else might there be? Basically 401k contributions. So it's really the gross wages, the Medicare tax. The additional Medicare tax is based on that threshold. All right, and that's 0.9%. This is the case, though, where I told you before the Medicare and the Social Security tax is matched by the employer and they have to submit that. There is no match on the additional Medicare tax. That is just the responsibility of the employee. Okay, so this stuff can be a little complicated, but it's important to understand what is coming out of your paycheck, especially for people who may not have worked before. Young people coming out of college, they don't really pay attention. If you had a college job, they may not be subject to withholding. Some of the FICA taxes, if you're working for the university, sometimes those are kids' first jobs when they go off to school. So you won't see those same things maybe on your W-2. I think it's really important to review your pay stubs when you get them so that you can understand all the taxes that are being taken out. What is this paying for? Some people think, oh, taxes, I pay so much money. But the federal taxes obviously, go to pay for federal programs and some of the benefits that we get in society. Social Security taxes are being withheld to build up your future benefit from Social Security. And that could apply to your retirement at some point, but it could also build up a record for you for disability. You have to have so many quarters to earn disability, and you might become disabled before normal retirement age. And that's what some of this is paying for. So that's the Social Security tax. And the Medicare tax we're paying is helping to pay for our hospital insurance when we eventually go on Medicare. Medicare Part A is hospital insurance, and this Medicare payments are helping to pay for those things. The additional Medicare tax that was instituted after January 1 of 2013 is helping to go support the Affordable Care Act and insurance. And I don't know all the specifics of that, but that's my understanding. All right. So those are some of the employee taxes. So we've talked about the federal tax withholding. It's your income, but they're withholding it for you, making those payments because the IRS is a pay-as-you-go system. The employer withholds it, kind of comes out automatically, pays it over to the government. When you file your tax return, you report your income, you report what they withheld, and you may end up with a little bit of a refund at the end if they withheld too much, or you may owe a little bit if they didn't withhold enough. Some people say, I already paid the tax. They withheld it. Well, it's just a guess, folks. It's based on, your wages, and you might have a lot of other activity on your tax return that the employer couldn't anticipate. Maybe you had another child and they don't know about that. So you may end up with an extra child tax credit, which could lower your tax liability, which was why you might be able to get a refund. You might owe because maybe you did great on your investments and had a big gain or had interest in dividends and didn't factor that in your withholdings. You didn't make estimated tax payments, so therefore you owe a little bit more. So the withholdings that the employer is doing is just based on tables that they look at, based on the information they have at the time. That is the employee side of it. I'll talk later in the show about some planning around that and whether you can make some adjustments to those wages and the tax ramifications. Obviously, many of you would already know what that would be, and that might be 401k contributions is one example. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. When we come back from this next break, I'm going to talk about self-employment tax. All right. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it into the studio. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Connect to WDIY with our streaming app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs that you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Oh, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, WDIY.org, and on the WDIY app. We are talking about taxes tonight for employees and self-employed individuals. We kind of gave you some of the highlights on employees, and I think the most interesting part of taxes for employees is the payroll piece that you don't really realize that you might be getting some benefit, but it's done kind of automatically. You don't think about it because you don't have to report it on your tax return necessarily unless you're self-employed, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But Social Security and Medicare tax, the employee pays some and the employer pays some. There's like a matching there. So what is self-employment tax? We've said I was talking about employees versus self-employed people. We could also call self-employed people sole proprietors or independent contractors. And I think there's a number of other names. And some of this will also apply to partners. In a partnership, if it's a regular partnership, I'm not talking about a limited partnership, maybe a partner in a law firm or partner in a business, that type of thing. Partners will also have self-employment income because it's a pass-through activity. Some partnerships might be rental properties, so that could be a little bit differently, but a business that has a partnership, some of this will apply as well. So self-employment tax is a tax consisting of Social Security and Medicare taxes. So basically, we've already talked about it. Social Security and Medicare, it's the same thing, self-employment tax. But here's the difference. Remember when we were talking about as an employee, the Social Security and Medicare tax, I said the employee pays 6.2% of Social Security and 1.45% for Medicare. Well, and then the employer pays 6.2% for Social Security and 1.45% for Medicare. When you add that up together, it's 15.3%. But as the employee, you're only really paying 7.65% into the system. And the employer's paying 7.65% into the system. When you're self-employed, you're really paying 15.3%. There are some deductions against that and some other calculations, but basically this is how it's easier to remember. So think about it like that. You figure out your self-employment tax on a schedule that you attach to your tax return. It's based on your self-employment income, whether that is Schedule C self-employment income or pass-through income from that partnership, which gets reported on Schedule E, page 2. So that is reported on SE, Schedule SE. And let me see what else. This is from the IRS's website. You can deduct, they're mentioning that while you calculate this tax and pay it on your tax return, there's also a deduction you get for having to pay that, and you get to deduct the employer side of that. So the employer side, the employer equivalent portion of that self-employment tax ends up being a deduction for self-employed people on their tax return, but it's not a deduction on their Schedule C. It doesn't lower their self-employment income. It is only a deduction against the total income. So the self-employment tax is calculated on that full amount. So again, the self-employment tax rate on that is 15.3. That consists of the two parts, the combination of employee-employer Social Security of 12.4, old age, survivors, and disability insurance, and then the 2.9% for the Medicare, which is that hospital insurance I mentioned. The same threshold applies for self-employment income that I mentioned for employees of $142,800. But here's a piece that we kind of have to pay attention to. If you're self-employed but also still have wages, because some people, as I mentioned, will still be an employee, maybe do some consulting on the side or maybe have a little business on the side, that $142,800 threshold applies to your combined wages, tips, and net earnings. So it's combined. So if you have $100,000 of wages with your employer and you have $100,000 of self-employment income, for the Social Security piece of it, it's capped at $142,800. So when we do that Form SE for self-employment tax, it will factor that in there. All right? So that's why it's important to do that schedule and make sure that you understand how to calculate it. And again, software these days really does a good job. We had a call from Ann in Bethlehem, and she said, how does your employer know to change your W-4? Well, your employer doesn't know to change your W-4. You have to know when to change your W-4. So if you've had a life change, something that's happened, or you go to do your tax return and you find out you owe a boatload of money, it might be time to go adjust your W-4 because maybe you filled it out, you know, before when you were married and now you're single and you never adjusted it. So you really have to be the one to know to do that. You gave an example, if you adopt a child and the employer doesn't know. That's true, Anne. You have to update that. And you might wait to kind of see what your tax return looks like, because if you maybe you adopted a child, but you might have some other income on your return, and maybe the child tax credit that you may be eligible for at that time might not totally offset the other income you have on your return. So you kind of want to wait and see. If you were already getting refunds before you adopted a child, and now you're getting a child tax credit on top of that, and, you know, if it's, what are those now, like, gosh, it just escaped me. They're raising it, because that's why I can't keep track of all the new laws anymore. Let's say it's a $3,000 child tax credit now instead of the old $2,000 credit. Right, then you might want to adjust your withholdings, because maybe you don't want a $3,000 refund. Maybe you want to break even and have that money during the year to spend on groceries and things like that. Or maybe you always had a refund before and you maybe it was a $2,000 refund you usually got, and now with an extra $3,000, it would be $5,000. That might be too much. So definitely adjust the W-4. On that note, I will remind people, for those who did have children who qualified for the child tax credit, because the IRS is doing an advanced child tax credit July through December, you may not have that same full child tax credit next year when you file your 2021 tax return. So if you might owe money, just make sure, if you're getting some extra money now, maybe put it away in the bank just in case, because you won't have that if you count on that every year and now you've got an advance on it, it'll be adjusted when we go to file your 2021 tax return. So be careful of that. And some people could opt out of it and may have, but if you didn't opt out of it, just make sure you know your tax projection for 2021. And if you normally count on that and break even every year because of your child tax credit, and now you got it ahead of time, well, you might not break even then. Make sure you have it available. All right, folks, thank you, Anne, for that question. I appreciate it. If you do have other questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY Allentown, the time is now 6:30 and is 82 with clear skies. Lehigh Valley weather, tonight is going to be 65. Thursday, a slight chance of showers, high 78. Thursday night, low 58. And for your Friday, 73 and sunny. Friday night, low 52. And Saturday is going to be high 76. And Saturday night, low 59. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. We are talking about taxes tonight from an employee perspective versus a self-employed perspective. And I want to add, when we're calculating the self-employment tax rate, and we're thinking someone might just be self-employed, that's fairly straightforward then. You fill out that form SE and calculate what the self-employment tax would be, which are the two parts, the Social Security part of 12.4% up to $142,800, and the 2.9% on all the net earnings, all of the net earnings. When I say net earnings, that's different than our wages, because when we're self-employed, net earnings is our profit less our deductions to come up with our net profit. And the 2.9 applies to all of that, similar to the employee, where the employee is paying 1.45, the employer is paying 1.45, that's where we get the 2.9, and that is subject to all of our wages and then the cap. But then recall and remember, when you might have both, and this is, you know, sometimes, you know, when I do these shows and I talk about, you know, some of these aspects, the people get very creative and they say, well, does that apply, you know, if my husband's working, but I'm self-employed, can I add those wages together? No, it's per taxpayer. So if the husband is W-2 income and the wife is, you know, self-employed, then the self-employed person is filing the form SE based on their net earnings. It has nothing to do with the husband's. If we have a situation where we have spouse one is earning wages and spouse two is earning wages and self-employment income, then spouse two is going to fill out the form SE and it'll take you through the calculation to factor in both the wages and the net earnings. All right. So just keep that in mind. It's very important. And the 0.9% additional Medicare tax also could apply to your self-employment income. Just a little side note, I've already mentioned about the self-employment tax deduction. You get a deduction for half of that self-employment tax. The employer portion of it is a deduction. So it's kind of like half, but it's the employer portion is a deduction against income, not a deduction on your Schedule C. And then there's also a deduction for self-employed health insurance. So there are still, when we talk about not just the taxes around employee or self or versus self-employed people, there's also some planning opportunities here. And if a self-employed person has individual coverage, then that could be a deduction for them on their tax return against income for self-employed health insurance. And if you heard me correctly, I said individual coverage, meaning if a spouse has coverage through work, that's considered like a group plan, that would not be eligible for this deduction. If I had individual coverage as a self-employed person that I had to go out and buy myself, that is considered a deduction. And that includes Medicare. I have a lot of folks who retire from their regular work. They go on to do consulting, and they're 66, 67, 68, 69, 70. They can take a deduction against that consulting income, not on the Schedule C, but on, you know, what I used to call page one of the return, and now it's on another schedule. But it is a deduction for self-employed health insurance, and it's 100% deduction for things like the Medicare Part B or the Medigap insurance. If you have long-term care insurance, there's a deduction for that, subject to certain caps. Dental insurance, vision, that prescription, that type of thing. So that's self-employed insurance, but it can't be, it's not deductible if it's a group plan, except for Medicare. That does count. All right. So that's just some little footnotes on that. Who must pay self-employment tax? You must pay self-employment tax and file Schedules SE if either of the following applies. Your net earnings from self-employment, excluding church employee income, was $400 or more. So $400 or more. So some of these people who go do these little, you know, eBay or, you know, some of these multi-marketing setups, if you earn more than $400, you're reporting it on schedule. And that's net profit, by the way. You're reporting it on Schedule C and have to go through these steps. If you're a church employee, it's income of $108.28 or more. I didn't even know that until I read this on the IRS's website. Generally, your net earnings from self-employment are subject to the self-employment tax that we've been discussing. If you're self-employed as a sole proprietor or independent contractor, you generally use Schedule C to figure net earnings from self-employment. If you have earnings subject to self-employment tax, use Schedule SE to figure your net earnings. And before you figure your net earnings, you generally need to figure your total earnings subject to self-employment tax. So I don't exactly know what that means, but you could have more than one business as well. I've seen people with multiple Schedule C's for different businesses. It does not matter how old you are, and even if you're already receiving Social Security or Medicare, that's important to know as well. Certain rules around self-employment tax for family caregivers, I'm not going to get into that. It's too complicated. And how do you pay your self-employment tax? You have to have a Social Security number, of course, or an I-10. And there's ways to obtain that if you don't already have it. That's on the IRS's website. But you pay your self-employment tax in one of two ways. You can pay it with your tax return. And for example, I have situations where I might have one spouse is self-employed making money and would owe tax on that, federal tax and the self-employment tax. And then the other spouse might be working and have withholdings. Sometimes what we'll do is we'll have the one spouse that's working with withholdings increase their withholdings. Remember, I said on the W-4, going back to what we talked about at the top of the show, on the W-4, there is a section where you can say withhold extra amounts. Occasionally, what I will do is have the spouse who's working with withholdings, have them withhold the extra amount, and then it's covered. Some people really don't want to make estimated tax payments. The estimated tax payments have to be made quarterly and timely and all of that. The withholdings are deemed to be made evenly throughout the year, no matter when they're made. So that's why I kind of like withholdings, because we can kind of increase them at the last quarter if I have to. If we didn't have enough tax covering for one spouse, I can increase the withholdings from the employer-employee type of situation. But other than that, you can just do quarterly payments, those estimated quarterly payments where you estimate how much your income is going to be for the year. And it's not just your income and the federal tax on the income. It's also the self-employment tax that you're having to cover and pay. A lot of times people will think, well, gosh, I'm going to have deductions. I'm going to have those child tax credits that, you know, I've heard about, or maybe an American Opportunity tax credit because my kid's in college now. So I'm going to wipe out my taxes with those credits that are available to me, or with that health insurance deduction, or with the half the self-employment deduction. But guess what? You still have the self-employment tax. That comes after all of those credits. The self-employment tax is after all of those credits. You have to pay the self-employment tax. That's got to go in. So if you have that, if your income's good and strong and you owe a lot of money because of that, you want to make sure you're doing those quarterly payments and get those paid in some fashion. Some people will do their withholdings. As I mentioned, if we have consultants who are older, 66, 67, or maybe 70 and a half or 72, and maybe they have required minimum distributions. Yes, I have consultants who are still working beyond age 72, beyond their required minimum distribution age, and will just have all the withholdings come out of the IRA payments. That's another way to cover that and do that. So just make sure that you take care of your responsibility if you're self-employed for those taxes that are due. I've already talked about the caps on the additional Medicare tax of 0.9%. I want to mention net earnings, because I talked about net earnings and the deductions against self-employed income. Employees could rarely take a deduction for their, you know, kind of business expenses. I have people ask me that all the time. Hey, can I take a deduction for my, you know, expenses I have? I say, are you an employee? Yeah. Well, no, commuting is not a deduction. And sometimes we'll have people, nurses who might have uniforms or licenses or continuing education, teachers, continuing education, doctors, continuing education, accountants, lawyers, license fees, and all of that. It used to be, prior to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, that if you itemized deductions on Schedule A, there was something called miscellaneous itemized deductions. If they exceeded 2% of your page one income, you might be able to get a little bit of a benefit from it. Most people never qualified for that either, but might not have been available from a federal side to benefit from it, but certain states also allow those deductions. Pennsylvania, for example, does have a Schedule UE where you can take certain of those deductions, even if you can't for federal. Those deductions aren't always the same. Certain things Pennsylvania does not allow that the federal used to allow. So you have to be careful. Make sure you read the instructions for the Schedule UE. So employees, not as advantaged to have unreimbursed employee business expenses. Hopefully your employer is covering most of those expenses that you might have, covering, you know, continuing ed, because that obviously benefits them to keep you licensed and all of that. So hopefully those will be covered. Let me see what else. So other kinds of expenses that a self-employed person might have, though, they would be able to take those on their Schedule C if they have expenses related to licensing or, you know, continuing education, travel. I mentioned employees, we don't get a deduction for commuting to work, but if I am self-employed and I have a business location, or I'm working out of my home and I'm going and seeing clients or customers or going to the warehouse to check on things, if I track my miles, I get a deduction for mileage. So on the Schedule C are listed all the different categories that you can take deductions against that self-employment income. I have to constantly remind my self-employed folks that don't spend money just to get a deduction so that you can lower your tax bill on your tax return, which is what a lot of them think they need to do, because I tell them you're still out of pocket more than what you would save. So if you have a $1,000 expense, you think there's something really cool, you'd like that nice fancy desk, you spend $1,000, you save some taxes, maybe, you know, when you factor it all in, self-employment tax and federal tax and state tax, maybe you save 30%. Well, you still are out of pocket $700. If you didn't really need that fancy desk, then we just saved you $700. All right. So that is much better than, you know, spending the money. If you have to have something like a computer or particular software, of course, then keep track of that. Make sure you keep your receipts, document everything, and then that's a deduction. And that's how we get to net earnings. And I will also mention there are a lot of apps out there now for tracking your miles, and the IRS expects that you're keeping what they call contemporaneous records. They want you to keep the record in the moment, not when they audit you, meaning you're not going to be able to make it up when they go to audit you. They want you to keep track of all of this information and have good records contemporaneous to the activity, the business activity. All right. So that's net earnings, and that's what that means. When we come back from this next break, I want to talk about the difference between a contractor and an employee. What is an independent contractor, and what is an employee? Because I think a lot of people, businesses, will hire someone and they say, we're going to hire you as an independent contractor, when really maybe you should be an employee. So we'll talk about that a little bit, and we'll finish up our discussion. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. We are talking about taxes, the differences between employee versus self-employed. I want to talk briefly about what's considered an independent contractor. And I picked this up, I believe, from the IRS's website as well. Independent contractor, people such as doctors, dentists, veterinarians, lawyers, accountants, contractors, subcontractors, public stenographers, or auctioneers who are in an independent trade, business, or profession in which they offer their service to the general public are generally independent contractors. Also, people who provide a service generally associated with the gig or on-demand sharing or access economy, such as ride sharing, may be treated as independent contractors. However, they are independent contractors or employees based on the facts in each case. The general rule is that an individual is an independent contractor if the person paying for the work has the right to control or to direct only the result of the work and not how it will be done. The earnings of a person who's working as an independent contractor are subject to self-employment tax. And then there's more information provided in Publication 15A, Employer Supplemental Tax Guide. And they also have like a brochure or a pamphlet on how businesses determine if a worker is an employee or an independent contractor. They say the degree of control and independence of workers fall into three main categories, and each must be considered when determining if a worker is an employee or independent contractor. Behavioral control. Does the business control or have the right to control how the worker does their job? Factors to consider include type of instructions given, degree of instruction, evaluation systems, and training. Financial control. Does the business have the right to control the economic aspects of the worker's job? Factors to consider include significant investment, unreimbursed expenses, opportunity for profit or loss, services available to the market, and method of payment. And then relationship. How does the worker and the business see their relationship with each other? Factors to consider include written contracts, employee benefits, permanency of the relationship, and services provided as key activities of the business. And I think that it's important to know. And why would someone hire you and want you to be considered an independent contractor? Can any of us think why? I want to be a teacher in front of a classroom right now. Can any of us think why? Do you remember when we talked at the top of the show for the employee taxes? And we mentioned Social Security and Medicare. And as an employee, the employer withholds from our pay 6.2% for Social Security and 1.45% for Medicare. And what is the employer responsible for? 6.2% for Social Security and 1.45% for Medicare. That is the employer's portion. The employers also typically will provide health insurance, maybe a 401k option. These are employee benefits that an employer provides. So why might an employer not want to hire you as an employee? Because they don't want to pay their share of the Social Security tax and Medicare tax. They may not want to contribute to a 401k for you. They may not want to pay for your health insurance. So there are advantages to an employer trying to treat you as an independent contractor. And a lot of businesses hire independent contractors very validly. They may have temporary needs, temporary work. They might be paying for expert, oversight, expert opinions, expert research. There are a lot of independent contractors very valid out there that employers, contract with and engage with. I have no problem with that. I have more of an issue with someone who's hiring people to try to get out of paying these extra taxes and still, treating you like an employee. So just be very careful. That's what I want people to be very careful. Are you hired as an employee? Are you hired as an independent contractor? I do see more and more, I think, of this happening. But at the same time, the IRS is coming down on it harder. There is a form, and I can't find the number for it. There is a form that you can file with the IRS to let them know that you think this company has hired you as an independent contractor when you really have an employee-employer relationship. Now, how many people are really filing that form? Probably not too many. And I remember back, when I was in college, I think it was, my little brother was working for someone, and I think I was helping him with his taxes. And they were paying him like an independent contractor, and he was totally an employee. And so we were kind of going back and forth on that and what all that meant. So it is out there. It's existed for a really long time. So just kind of watch out for that. Be aware of it. Be aware of what it means. In fact, I've done shows where I talk about putting in an Excel spreadsheet the various perks of jobs as you're kind of weighing the pros and cons of different jobs. When you're looking at the pay that you're getting, I have one of my best friends is a nurse, and she kind of retired, went per diem. It's called per diem or as needed as a nurse to be paid like kind of on call. She goes in like maybe once a week, and she tells them, here's the day I'll go in. And they're kind of calling her and asking her to change the days from time to time. But and she even might be W-2 as I'm thinking about this, but they're paying her less. They're paying her less money. And I'm thinking that person now is no longer, getting health insurance or any of the retirement benefits, and they're paying her less money than as a nurse. And it makes no sense to me, because her pay should probably go up if she's not getting the same kind of benefits that she would as an employee. So just kind of watch for those things. Know what you're going into if you're an employee or if you're an independent contractor. Also to note, if you could be self-employed and also have employees yourself, if you're self-employed and you're a sole proprietorship, a Schedule C, or even a partnership, you still might have employees where you are subject to the payroll requirements that I mentioned at the top of the show, that I said employers have to pay, withhold the taxes for the employee for federal, state, local taxes, and the Social Security tax, and submit those and file the payroll documents, and also pay the employer side of that. A Schedule C self-employed person or a partnership could have those. S-Corp could have them as well. So you can have employees yourself. I don't see it as often. Typically, a self-employed person, usually someone who's consulting or has a small business and quite often does not have employees. There's certain advantages to that, as I mentioned, about, having to, afford all those benefits. It may be difficult for small self-employed people to have, to provide health insurance for a large staff and things like that. They might hire just independent contractors from time to time. So they might have employees, maybe not. They might have independent contractors. So if a sole proprietor has employees, they may have payroll. If they don't have employees, but they're hiring independent contractors, then they're going to be filing 1099s. There's a new form called the 1099 NEC for non-employee compensation. That could be you hire someone to come in and just do a small job for you. You're not hiring them long term. They're coming in and, maybe pouring the cement if you're a home builder or something. I've had clients who have put sunrooms on the back of people's houses. They might have hired someone to come in and pour the concrete, and then they're gone and that's the end of their job. So you can, as a self-employed person, have payroll, have, those W-4s and file the W-2 filings with the IRS and or 1099s, NEC for non-employee compensation. Maybe you pay out other things that might require a 1099 MIS, MISC for miscellaneous, and you have to make sure you're taking care of those requirements. Some other planning really quickly. For self-employed people, you can have a solo 401k. As an employee, we can have a 401k if our employer provides one. If our employer doesn't provide a 401k, we might do an individual retirement account that lowers our income. The 401k has much larger contributions and deductions that we can take. Health savings accounts are deductions for employees, could also be for someone who's self-employed, depending on what kind of health coverage you have. You have to have a high deductible health plan. As a self-employed person, I can have my, as I said, solo 401k or an individual 401k. I can have a profit-sharing piece to it. So I can do the employee portion, which is $19,000 for an individual, $19,500. We can do an extra $5,500 if we're over 50. But we can also do a profit-sharing piece, which rounds out to about 20%, subject to certain caps. Those are big deductions, not against the self-employment income, but against our page one income. For high earners, usually, age 50 and above, who have consistently high earnings and expect to continue to have those for 3 years plus, you could even, as a self-employed person, set up a defined benefit plan, like a pension plan for yourself. That could be a very big deduction. It's, again, usually typically for high earners and those expected to have consistently high earnings. And typically for people age 50 or older, that's where you get the largest deduction. I recently had someone who is a little younger, and it was communicated that it makes sense to do it older because you have to have there's actuarial valuations that are done and calculations, and it's based on a retirement date. And so kind of the sooner that retirement date is, the bigger the deduction is. And that is the whole goal of doing the defined benefit plan. And typically those defined benefit plans, those pension plans, basically for an individual, can be set up so that instead of getting that pension, you can roll it over to an IRA when you close out the plan. For years and years, people would get pension plans, and that is a monthly benefit. And then when you die, it's done, or it goes to a spouse if there was a spousal benefit. In recent decades, I'd say, more of those plans have gone to cash balance plans, or that you could roll them over in a lump sum to an IRA. The IRS has allowed that, and that also applies to some of these individual defined benefit plans. All right. Folks, we are coming up on the end of the show. I hope this was helpful to at least some of you. It's always good to review your own tax situation, look at your pay stubs, see what's getting calculated on there is your taxes. It's a great lesson for people if you have children who are just starting off working, if they haven't looked at their pay stub or they don't understand why it's a little less than what they were told they were going to get paid. It's great to go through that exercise to look at the pay stub to see what kind of taxes are taken out. If your kids are good savers, it's also a great time to tell them that maybe they could fund a Roth IRA or a individual retirement account or a 401k if their employer has that. Some kids start off early at a regular employer. You can do that. So always a good lesson. But make sure that you also understand the differences between independent contractors and employees, and that if you're getting out there in the working world and you don't have a lot of experience, make sure you understand the difference. Because when I have people who are self-employed and I tell them set aside between 30% to 40% for the taxes and or retirement savings, they say, what? What amount? Well, because if you're self-employed, about 15.3% is going to that Social Security and Medicare tax. And then we want to make sure we cover the federal and state tax and local tax and maybe have enough to fund some retirement accounts as well. Because when you're self-employed, nobody's doing that for you. You have to do it for yourself. All right. So thank you for our caller tonight. We appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Shandi, for being here. Thank you, Kyle, for being here. Next week, I am talking about taxes, planning for the unknown, taxes, Social Security, and death, planning for the unknowns. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.